Thanks for joining me. We shall talk about education, but not in the traditional sense. We need to understand a bit more about the requirements of the real-world market data versus what is on offer right now. Here to discuss this and more is a very good friend of mine, childhood friend of mine actually, Jagdish Singh Malhi, the Director of Student Recruitment and Marketing at University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Jag, thanks again for coming over. This is our first time meeting, I don't know, for so many years. Yep. There's a lot that needs to be unpacked, but first things first, what is the education landscape looking like these days? Do you feel that we are servicing the requirements of what is needed in the marketplace and also trying to fulfill and the aspirations and wants of our young students right now?
Thanks, Ibrahim. It's a pleasure to be here. Indeed, it's been a long time. So to answer your question, I think in the sector we are seeing a very good rebound post-COVID. You know, I think many universities across that 2 to 3 years suffered a little bit, but we're seeing very strong growth, and even for us in Nottingham, this year has been very encouraging. Mm-hmm. So across domestic and international recruitment. So that's great. Mm-hmm. In serving the needs of you know, what the young people are looking for, I think there's a lot of news about what those changing views are around you know, the future of work, mm-hmm. and what kind of roles they want to get into. Mm-hmm. But when we speak to a lot of the young people who come and enroll at the university, I think there's a very clear sense that, you know, there are still a lot of students who are very clear about what they want to achieve.
Okay.
And typically we will see, you know, three different groups of students, right? The first group would be, I know what I want to do. I know how I'm going to get there. And I just want to apply.
Okay.
Or tell me a bit more about the other things.
Yeah.
Right. The next group will be, I know one or two roles that I might be interested in, right? And I'm not so sure what degrees will get me there. And this is the largest group, right? So we provide a lot of counseling and advice about what might be suitable for them, mm-hmm. right? The last group, which is quite small, is I'm really not sure what I want to do. I'm really lost. Sometimes you've read so much online that you're having paralysis by analysis, right?
Yeah.
There's just so much. And that's the case, Ibrahim. If you go online and you search, you know, what's the best engineering degree, you know, you start at 10 p.m., next thing you know, it's 3 a.m.
It's a rabbit hole that you can't get out
of. It's a rabbit hole, right?
Yeah.
So our job is also to provide that expert advice, to guide them based on what they need, what
okay.
they're looking for, right? That's really important.
I'm a traditionalist, I'm a dad, I want all my children to have a degree, but I'm also a realist. If it doesn't take 4 years out of my children's life away and they can start on the get-go and learn on the go and get specialization along the way and the professional certifications, a lot of them do not require a bachelor's, why would we still go with this Asian parent pathway of, oh, you must have a degree? Not just that, lawyer, engineer, doctor. Otherwise, you're a failure. How do we fit a traditionalist worldview and a realist worldview? Is it even compatible?
Yeah. And that's a question a lot of parents, or in this case, students have these days. We've seen numerous reports in Malaysia where, you know, government is saying, oh, we've done this survey, and a lot of students, or 70%, are saying, after SPM, we don't want to continue into mm-hmm. higher education.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, if you look around the globe, it's the same challenge the US has, for example. The number of enrollments at universities in America has dropped significantly,
mm-hmm.
and but I think in the US they have a very different model for funding education, and you always talk about debt mm-hmm. in that case, right? In
mm-hmm.
Malaysia, it's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are a few things to unpack here. Number one is we see a lot more content online
mm-hmm.
from big names or big companies where I think in many cases what was said has probably been sensationalized. One line or, you know, one sentence sensationalized to say, oh, degrees are no longer relevant, mm-hmm. no longer needed.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the question for you as a parent or for a student is, okay, figure out what you want to do in the next 5 to 10 years. And then work backwards and look at what route is going to get you there, right? So for some roles in computer science, you know, for programming, it is arguable, or there are some cases, earlier we were talking about what is the exception versus the norm. There are some cases where, yes, Google has said for certain roles, in lieu of a degree or other certification, we will look at your experience. So they are probably referring to those one or two people who win the hackathons every year.
Okay.
Right? The top 1%.
Yeah.
Right? We're talking about the top, the best of the best.
Innately terror.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you are that, and you can get to that level, sure, of course, a lot of companies are going to be saying, Ibrahim.
Yeah, but that's 99% of the rest of us.
Yeah.
So how do we cater for that?
Yeah.
A lot of people think that they are 1%, but let's be frank here.
Yeah.
Not.
Yeah.
So the 99% of us, how do we cater for them then?
So I think the key thing is, when you talk about higher education, now Malaysia, we are really blessed. Why? If you look around the region, many countries in Asia today cannot provide enough seats at university for their people, which is why a lot of students in these countries have to go abroad.
Mm.
There are not enough seats locally.
Mm.
But in Malaysia, we have choice.
Mm.
We have options, right? Even public universities are opening their private pathways. So like UM, for example, now, for certain degrees, you can apply as a private candidate.
Mm.
Fees are still affordable.
Mm.
There's a range of private universities with different levels of fees, right? So in Malaysia, the great thing is we have options. Second thing is we have funding from the government. You've got PTPTN, you've got so many scholarships. You can use your EPF account too. So there are so many ways for parents to also fund their education. So I would say at the moment, Malaysians, we are very blessed because you don't have the financial challenges most of the time for most families. Of course, when we go into the B40, that's going to be then a different discussion, right? How do we increase participation? How do we help these students from disadvantaged backgrounds? I'm talking for the average middle-class family compared to many countries in the world in that context, right? We have the options, we have the funding, right? So access to a higher education is not a problem in Malaysia. You can get it, right? But I think the question now is what's being sensationalized is, oh, degrees are no longer required, or what's the point of going to university? And if you go online, preparing for this discussion, you know, a week back, so I have my views from my experience about why an education, higher education is important. And as you probably know, I didn't start my career in higher education, right? So I started in financial services and came into higher education. And so I wouldn't, you know, I would say to parents, look, this is my role, but I feel very proud about where I work because I know what we're doing, right? The quality we are delivering at the value. And we can come to that later. So back to that point, it's really about then being very clear about what you want to do next, okay? And if you're unclear yet, then figure that out first, right? Because if you want to go into the gig economy, okay, let's take an example of ride sharing. Or, you know, we have big companies now in Malaysia, in the world. What happens when it's a monopoly? So now your commission might be X percent that the company takes from you, right? And you're earning X amount. When this company becomes a monopoly and they increase the commission, what are you going to do?
Mm.
Is there anything you can do?
Nothing much.
So what is your backup plan, right? If you think you're 17 and you're like, look, when we were in university, there were so many interesting things to do. A lot of people wanted to quit university and go and sell Lombardier. You know, you remember that, right? Right?
Yeah.
My friend is driving a BMW, selling these magic lamps, earning 10,000 a month.
Yeah,
that was the influencer of the
2000s. Yeah,
right. So the influencer today, now influencers have been around our whole lives. The difference is the internet has supercharged that one-to-many voice.
Yeah.
I can be an influencer. You are already an influencer, right?
Yeah.
So what has changed in the last 10 to 15 years is this ability for anyone with a phone going like that, is they have a voice. Some people, again, top 1% or maybe 10%, have done really well. And we look at them and think, that could be me, right? So I'm tempted to go and try it. Now, what is the opportunity cost? So you're now giving up that. You have to decide, do I want to spend 5 years trying to be an influencer? And trying to make it, or do I want to go and get a degree? Or I would say, I'm not here to say that you should just go to university and get a degree. But if you're not going to do that, what are you going to do? Be very clear on that, right? You can, if it's not a degree, do you want to go and get a professional certification, go into TVET? If you're going to be a plumber or a mechanic or something else, but get certified, get a skill that you can get good at and get paid for, right? And there are many other reasons to get a degree. If you want to migrate, you see, the world is so global today, right? We talk, you know, many countries will term it as brain drain, right? But if you read up about the trends, right? I was reading a very interesting book last week about the world in 2050, okay? So world in 2050, one of it, they talk about the migration of people all over the world. So jobs are global, crossing boundaries is so much easier, right? And so when you apply for a job overseas, or if you want to move for a different opportunity, right? What is one of the questions that they ask you? What's your degrees? Forget about going overseas. Apply for a bank loan now.
But is that question going to change by 2050? Instead of that question of what degree do you have or what you're trained at or which school do you go to, it's more of how many followers do you have? Oh, you have 1.6 million followers. Come, I'll hire you.
Yeah.
Will that be the question? That's the thinking that I have for my kids.
Yeah, I think, and that's a good question, right? What's going to change over time? So, of course, hindsight is going to be 2020. Who knows? But I would think that for many governments, for many organizations, the path to least resistance to determine quality, and we are creatures of habit. So let me turn it around and ask you, how do you determine quality? You want to go to a new restaurant, what do we do? We go on Google.
TripAdvisor, whatever lah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to determine quality, right?
Not anything else. It's just a starting point. By the way, this is not a rhetorical question. Just last week, my youngest, in terms of celebrating, we wanted crab. I Googled chili crab PJ.
Yeah.
There are three whatever options there.
Yeah.
I just looked at the highest rating. I went for the second option, for instance, because of whatever. Just to test.
Yeah.
And I had no point of data, I suppose, right? Is that the way people are going to think for CVs as well? And of course, with CVs, what is inside that CV? Is it, oh, you graduated from Russell's group or Ivy League? Or is it, okay, you're high on IG and not so much on TikTok and you're nothing on Twitter. Okay, these are the kind of considerations I have for you. And this guy's high on Twitter or the kind of engagement. Okay, you may have only 10,000, but the people that follow you, that 10,000. So what are the considerations? That is the one that is keeping me awake at night.
I think for many roles, I don't think your social media following for a graduate entry role or for many roles, I don't think your social media following is going to be a determining factor for whether you get offered a job.
Today? But is 20 years from now going to be different?
So, okay, let's pick a job. Doctor, lawyer, engineer.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. So, if you were going to work, let's say you're an engineer, now you're hiring someone, in 20 years, how would having, say, 10 million followers,
nothing.
How would it matter? You know what I mean?
Doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
You need an engineering graduate.
Yeah. But if I'm hiring someone to work in media,
okay.
If I want Ibrahim Sani who has this following, if I want to get Joe Rogan, right?
Yeah, I want to get Joe Rogan.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Yeah.
So if you want to get Joe Rogan, then immediately it's like yes, because
so people transpose critical vocations with that of say marketing and media and mass communications and the like.
Yeah.
The appeal now is that when we were young, we were aspiring to be engineers, lawyers. I had a personal aspiration of trying to be an accountant, which I did. You know, I graduated, I got a qualification, worked in a bank, and then I decided, you know what, maybe I need to go into finance media. All right, so that's how I charted a career out of myself. But I was clear on what I wanted to be. Do kids these days have that kind of aspirations? Do you know, between my three kids, maybe because they're bored of seeing me on TV every day, they have already selected their vocation. My eldest wants to be something along the lines of finance. My boy wants to be a doctor. My youngest wants to be an architect or a designer. Not that far off if you think about it. And we were talking our son out of it. His mom was like, mommy's a doctor. Mommy has been studying for 7 years for a degree in MBBS and then another 5 years punishing myself for a specialization in psychiatry.
Yeah.
I have been crying the whole time. This is the life of a doctor.
Yeah.
You see me.
Yeah.
Why do you still want to be a doctor? He's like, because I want to help people. Yeah. It's clear. This is the life that it's fine.
Yeah.
So what if it's a struggling group? So that is a... Of course, things change. He's an 11-year-old boy. Just last month, he wants to be Lionel Messi. So what I'm trying to say is, as long as kids aspire to a particular vocation that is professionally driven, I get that.
Yeah.
But what about the many of us? And I'm not just talking about T20, M40, B40. I'm talking about the many kids these days that look at TikTok 24/7 that looks at IG and has mental health issues. We have seen all the studies that have shown that mental health issues are driving up based on IG usage. Do they have that kind of aspiration? So is it down to the folks like you and me that needs to impress upon them and their parents to start thinking about a lifelong career instead of just getting paid doing, you know, product endorsements?
That's a fantastic question. Something that we all grapple with as parents, as our roles in, you know, what we do at work as well. So, you know, they say, you know, it takes a village to raise a kid. And I know that's a very common a phrase that's used. But I think in this case, that's really apt, right? Mm. So what is the role of parents? Mm. What role do we play, right? How involved and engaged are we with our children? What is the role of schools, of government, of other people that interact with our children? Because a lot of what comes out in the media shapes perception and interest. So you look at the rise in demand for courses in healthcare, right? After COVID, right? So there's this interesting study that looked at, okay, because of COVID, and you saw this importance of frontliners and healthcare, they tied that to the increased applications into like medical, you know, MBBS, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
I think the point I'm trying to make here, Ibrahim, is we are easily influenced, right? Which is why there's always a role for influencers, you know. And so the question for us is to be aware of what we are seeing in the media. It's a way for you to be informed, but also we need to be very clear on, you know, what are the other sources of information. And it's not, I'm not linking that to what the media is saying, but what I'm saying is, how do we develop our critical thinking skills, our ability to think through what are all the different options, and how do we want to get there? So back to your question of, you know, what is our role to help the future generation? I think number one is from the parents, as parents, we need to play that role. But number two, I think we need more people coming out and talking about, well, you know, I went to university and this has been my experience. Of course, we wouldn't know what our experience could have been if we didn't go to university and did something else, right?
Yeah.
But it is just worrying that there are so many people with influence, mostly in the West, but that is the content we consume, right? But a lot of people in the West are talking about, oh, you know, a degree is dead, you don't need it anymore, university, etc., etc., etc. But I think we have to be very clear, the reason there's a lot of unhappiness in, say, in the US, is because of the burden of their education cost, right? So you can go to a state college that will probably cost you about $60,000, which dollar for dollar, maybe not too bad. But if you go to private education, you know, you're talking $150,000, $200,000.
Yeah, US even dollars, higher if you go into an...
Yeah. So it's really about that. But let me share with you, we are still really, really pleased to see that I can only tell you about what we see from our end, right? There is still very strong demand. A lot of students are coming to us to talk about their future, their aspirations. And a lot of the discussions that we have, it always starts with, what is your aim?
They don't have a name, right? Especially that three buckets that you mentioned, the last bucket.
Yeah.
I don't even understand that question. Sorry, I understand that question, but I don't know the answer. I'm not even pretending wanting to know the answer.
So we can take them through a process of discovery, right? You can do a personality test. You can take a career test. There are the 10 answer hee-hee-ha-ha questions, I think that's not really going to help you.
Yeah.
But we need to put some time in to do the, you know, something more rigorous, right? And you get a professional to sit down with you and take you through that. And so from there, you sort of think about, okay, could this be something that I might be interested in? The one thing that we are also thinking about, actually, so there's a lot of interest in helping students discover what's going to be exciting for them, right? And there are some plans for next year, which I can't share at this point, but I'm quite excited about some of the things we are thinking about next year. Because, Ibrahim, there's a lot of opportunities around thinking about, as a university, we have all these partners.
Yeah.
Right? We have partners in industry.
Yeah.
Okay. Partners in industry need talent. They want the best talent. It's a war for talent, right? Because we know today the economy is not competing just on product or service, but very strong is that talent being able to deliver for what you need, right? Mm-hmm. So what can a university do to provide students or even students still in school with a sort of work-like experience or some exposure to what the roles are like, right? So as a university, what role can we play to leverage our partnerships with industry to provide you, the student, at a younger age, right, from 3, from 4, from 5, with some idea already of maybe what are some of the different roles and what can you do? So I guess the easiest way to say it would be, what would a kidzania for teens look like?
Yeah.
Or a kidzania for young adults look like?
And that is what, you know, universities like Nottingham is offering.
And I think that's a big opportunity, right?
Yeah.
Because why should kidzania just be for kids?
Quick one. Social visit pass for international students and Malaysian visa liberalisation plan. We've heard the Prime Minister, PMX, recently announced the introduction of a long-term social visit pass for international students. This is aimed at addressing the need for skilled labour in Malaysia.
Yeah.
How do you foresee this policy impacting international student enrolment in your university and universities across the country? And what strategies do you think that you're considering to actually capture this particular potential influx of international students?
I think that was, you know, it was really pleasing to read that in PMX announcement. We are waiting for the official announcement, which will come
from... And of course the details that comes along with it.
Yeah. So, but if I were to speculate, I think immediately, of course, this is fantastic news, not just for the sector, not just for higher education, but for all the other interdependent sectors for the country.
Like what?
So, think about it. Would you agree that a student, international student coming here for 3 to 4 years to study, I would say that is a long-term tourist in some
ways.
Right?
Yes.
Think about it.
Yes.
You have one extra person coming in, paying rent, spending on food.
Grab.
Everything, right? Your retail, clothes, this and that. So what is the impact of one additional student coming in for 3 to 4 years?
For the economic growth of the country.
What is that multiplying effect,
right?
Now, the government wants 250,000 students by 2025.
Okay.
Okay. So, if you have these students coming in, it's not only great for higher education, it's great for the property sector. We have an overhang of properties, right? Rentals are a big problem.
Yeah.
You need people to fill it up, right?
It's gonna
revitalize our local economy, your machi-machi, your mama, you know, everybody's
gonna
benefit, right?
Yeah.
So, that's that big benefit there. Now, for universities, you know, in Malaysia, we have, as I said earlier, a lot of choice. And I think for many Malaysian universities, we do want to attract more international students to diversify your tuition fee collection. But there's so many other benefits for students, right? It's about building a global network, you know. Like when I was in university, I had friends from different countries. We are still in touch, right? So today, if I fly to Oman, or Bangladesh,
it's
or Pakistan.
It's like that.
Right?
That's even like, with me. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Phone call away.
So, and after some years in the professional life, we know that these networks are so important. Right? So that's one of the things we talk about at the University of Nottingham.
That I didn't see before. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Only after working.
Only after.
Yeah.
Right? In Malaysia, colloquially, we'll say, you got cable or not, right?
But,
But these are the cables that you build
across
around the world,
right?
And across your lifetime. And it's these 4 years that you spend with someone, right? Playing sports, going to class, going through your ups and downs.
Yeah.
That's where the bond builds.
Yeah.
And it's for life.
Yeah.
Right? So to me, it is, when I look at the economic impact, it is across the country. Then the other thing to look at is, all right, you know, if we are moving into aging nation status and super aging by 2030, if we need more manpower, right, where is it going to come from? Then how are we going to decide who to bring in? Because now we have a lot of blue-collar workers, right? If you want the white-collars in, then I would think one of the ways to do that is you already have a student who's coming here for 3 to 4 years. They understand how the country works. They understand the culture, the norms. They know how to, they are already slightly integrated, right? Know how to order Milo ice, teh tarik, they get it, right? And if you can then flow them into graduate entry roles, then, you know, that's going to be another way for you to get manpower. Now, why is that important? For companies who are investing, deciding where to invest, open up regional HQs, the key thing they always look at is access to talent.
Number one.
Right? So Malaysia, we also have this goal to produce more high-income jobs. We want to upskill, we want to have high-tech talent and all of that. Now, of course, that dimension starts with, all right, what are we doing for Malaysians, right? And how much can we grow that?
Yeah.
But then it's also about if we need more, then where are we going to get it? How are we going to get it? What is that pathway to decide who comes in and how, right?
So activities and initiatives like this social visit pass for international students and visa liberalization plan is part of that, part and parcel of that in trying to boost up the requirements.
I would think so, but I think it's hard to tell right now because we don't have the full details and PMX did not also, you know, speak too much about why.
Yeah, it's a touch and go moment.
Like, by the way, you know, we are doing this. But this is something, just to give you some background, that the sector, you know, all of us have been in long discussions with the government about. So it is something that I think, you know, has gone through a lot of thinking, weighing the pros and cons. And we have a lot of reference points with other countries, right? Because when you look at global, let me tell you a bit more about higher education destinations, okay? So tier one destination, tier one meaning in, you know, across the globe, where do people want to go to? Where do they go to for higher education, right? UK, US, Canada, Australia. Mm. Like, this would be your big four. Mm. Then in tier two, I would say you've got Singapore, Malaysia, Dubai.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, Malaysia versus Singapore and Dubai, we are a lot more cost effective.
Mm-hmm.
Very multicultural. Of course, Singapore and Dubai also very multicultural.
Mm-hmm.
But I think here, in terms of that integration into culture for so long, we've already been very multicultural for so long, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like Dubai, for example, is, I don't know, 80% South Asian or something,
mm-hmm.
right?
It's, mm-hmm.
but so it's very different in terms of that makeup.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at the reasons international students come to Malaysia,
mm-hmm.
the first thing is proximity.
Mm-hmm.
If you're living anywhere in Asia, right, mm-hmm. 3-4 hours, you're here. Mm-hmm. Connectivity is so easy,
mm-hmm.
right? We have some of the best infrastructure in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
Mm-hmm.
For Malaysians who complain all the time,
well,
they really need to travel and look around.
Still, you know.
Right? Because honestly, I'm very blessed. In my role, I get to speak with families from all over the world. But the thing that hits me every time when I travel is, we actually have it so good in Malaysia, right? So we have the infrastructure. We have locals are actually very welcoming and friendly
mm-hmm.
to international students, and that's important.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to go to a country where you don't feel welcome.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's also very important.
Yeah.
So with all of this, Ibrahim, the only thing that has been lacking for us to really become a global hub
mm.
is this, what we usually call a post-study work visa.
Mm.
Right? Because for these international students, they want to go and study abroad and then hopefully get a role. And you guess what? From there, it doesn't mean they're going to stay here forever as well,
mm-hmm.
right? Again, we go back to how roles are so global.
Yeah.
Right?
And therefore, they will be able... So you're very optimistic about this?
So I'm optimistic because I think there's going to be a huge spillover effect on the broader economy.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not a higher education thing.
Yeah.
But it's a question that we need to go further up and say, for each additional person spending 3 to 4 years here, what is the economic impact?
Yeah.
When it comes to employment,
yeah.
it's really up to the employer, whether they're going to hire,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean that you have the visa that you're automatically going to...
Yeah, but this is, of course, an overall positive, I suppose, net positive for the economy.
Very positive, I think so, yeah.
That was our conversation with Jagdish Singh Malhi, the Director of Marketing as well as Student Recruitment at University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Do check them out. But for now, my name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.